That's important. Okay, so the first one of these determining processes in a star is just basically going to be the main source of power in the star, the energy production, which happens via fusion. As we talk about stellar evolution, we'll talk about different sources of, or different types of fusion, different elements getting fused into other elements. But the one that we've talked about mainly so far for the sun is the proton-proton chain, right? Four hydrogen into one helium. We've been talking the last couple days in class about energy transport, how you get that energy that you create from that fusion process out of the star. And there were two main methods that we used to do that, which were what? Radiation and convection. And sort of the main fundamental underlying physical principle underneath that radiation transport was what we talked about, opacity, how thick the star's atmosphere appears to be for photons trying to pass through it. So opacity is an underlying thing here. So these are ways of producing and transporting energy. As far as forces that are involved, we have gravity, first of all, right? That's what's trying to pull the star down into a single point. And we have gravity balanced with what we call radiation pressure the other way. So all those photons pushing out from the center of the star, those two things together make up the balance, which is hydrostatic equilibrium. Which we can write down an equation to describe, where we say the pressure gradient dP dr is equal to negative density as a function of radius times the acceleration due to gravity g at a given radius. So at every given point of radius in the star, you have a different balance of pressure and gravity. Depends on what the density is and what the actual force of gravity is at that point. So those are the basic things that we've talked about so far, right? Just as sort of internal processes in a star, things that power it, how that power gets out, and what forces are at play. There's one more concept we want to kind of keep in mind as we talk about evolution, because it will sort of be the context in which we consider how the star will change as different quantities inside the star change. And that's what we call the equation of state. Luckily for us, we can sort of treat the sun in sort of an ideal way, make sort of some simplifying assumptions about how it's going to behave, which means that our best equation of state for a star, at least like the sun, is going to be the ideal gas law. So that's hopefully an easy one for you to remember. Probably the way that you've seen this written down is something like pressure times volume is equal to some density n times some constant times the temperature of the gas, right? So in your chemistry class, that's lowercase n. There's an r in there, that's the concert or the constant. This is the physics version of it. There's a bunch of different ways you can write this down, how you write down the density, how you write down what exactly the pressure is. But the version that we'll sort of mostly see as we talk about stars is this version, where we say that pressure is equal to the density rho, which is just like normal mass density, so like grams per cubic centimeter or kilograms per cubic meter, times the constant K times the temperature, divided by the letter mu times lowercase m sub h. What's that part down there on the bottom? The mu is what we call the mean molecular weight. And then m sub h is the mass of a hydrogen atom. So basically what this is asking is it's a way to scale the density here to reflect what the chemical composition on the inside of the star is. So this mu will basically just be some fraction or multiple, just a number like 1, 1/2, 2, 4, something like that. What that tells you is what if you take up all the different particles in the star and take the average, if you divide them by the mass of hydrogen, if your star is exclusively composed of helium, which has 4 times the mass of hydrogen, that mu number will be 4. If you have nothing but hydrogen, that number will be 1. If you have a mix of hydrogen and electrons, where you have equal numbers of electrons and protons, the number will be 1/2, right? Because an electron is basically 0 compared to a proton. Close to 1/2, not exactly 1/2, but Sophia.
I understand what mu is from, like, I explained it in the examples you gave, but is there a way to say it in, like, a sentence or a phrase?
With words, not with math.
No, math words.
Math words.
Or whatever. I think you know what.
Mean molecular weight is the average particle mass.
In units of hydrogen.
In units of hydrogen mass.
Thank you.
Yeah. Which is why we multiply it by the mass of a hydrogen atom in that equation. To get out the units in whatever the units of density are. So basically what we'll see is that we start out a star having a particular chemical composition to it. Right? We've talked about being able to look at the outside of a star, the atmosphere of a star, the spectrum of that star, and see the chemical footprint of what exists in that star by looking at all the absorption lines in the atmosphere of that star. If you take that chemical composition and figure out the mean molecular weight, you start out with a starting value for that star. And over time, as the star evolves, as fusion proceeds in the core, that number will slowly go up over time. Because you're removing hydrogen, turning it into helium. Then you're going to remove helium and turn it into carbon, and so on and so forth. You're going to increase the average mass of a single particle in the sun over time. So we'll see that number change. So what happens is as this number gets bigger, on the bottom here, the other values that you can change in here have to change to account for that change in the molecular weight. And that's what drives the evolution of a star. So we'll come back to that. Let's just quickly remind ourselves what the chemical composition of the sun actually is. And what this sort of fingerprint of an individual's, I can't spell today, composition. This fingerprint of what a star is made out of in terms of its elements is going to have a secondary effect on the evolution of the star because of that idea of changing mean molecular weight. Overall, the biggest determining factor here is just the mass of the star, how much stuff there is, because that's driving gravity. So gravity is the main force at work here. But chemical composition will change the speed at which things happen, what temperature threshold you have to reach, things like that. But that's only a secondary effect. But let's just remind ourselves. So in the sun, we said that there were three different, I think we talked about this in class, three different X, Y, and Z values. So X is how much hydrogen there is, Y is how much helium there is, and Z is what we call metals, which for astronomers are everything heavier than helium. And yes, I know oxygen is not a metal, but we're going to call it a metal for our purposes. It's everything else. In the sun, X is 70% of the total mass of, or the total, mass of the star. So hydrogen is 70% by mass. Helium is 28%. And metals adds up to then the remaining 0.02%. And then you also, when you compute mean molecular weight, you also have to consider free electrons in that as well. So you have to figure out how many particles you have and work out electrons, and then that gives you a value. We won't actually think about what the precise value of mu is as we go through, just that it will be slowly increasing as we move through evolution. Sophia.
So that's the X, Y, and Z values at what point in time? Now?
This is for the sun.
Doesn't change.
Now. But, and this is an important point to make, when we observe the chemical composition of the sun, all we can see from our point of view here on Earth, if you think of the sun as like an egg or an onion, right? The skin of the onion or the shell of the egg. We cannot see past that outer layer into the inside of the sun to measure what that chemical composition is at any given point inside the sun. Right? So we're only seeing the very outer layer. And that, generally, 95% of the time, will not change over time. It will stay the same. As the interior of the sun changes and evolves over time. So even though the physical appearance of the sun might change, we'll talk about changes in temperature and radius and luminosity, the chemical composition that you observe from the outside will generally stay the same. Even though the chemical composition in the inside of the sun is changing and where those elements are distributed. I hope that makes some sense. Sophia.
So you said we can only know the chemical composition on the surface, but the one inside is changing. So like, do we have like indirect evidence of that? Or?
So right, so this is all based on, in truth, right, this is all theoretical modeling, right? Because we can't actually fly into a star and see what's happening. But based on our theories of what happens, what changes over time, that produces effects that we can observe from the outside, which we'll start talking about. So like things getting brighter or bigger or smaller, and that generally tracks with what we think happens inside of a star.
That like the part that we can measure the composition of, like what fraction is that of the radius, like order of magnitude?
It's
like 1/10.
An infinitesimal small.
Okay.
It's the very outer layer of the photosphere. So I guess less than 1%, less than 0.1% of the radius of the star. Think literally think onion skin, right? It's that thin. We'll come back to that metaphor of an onion multiple times here, because it really is apt. I hope you like onions. And like we said, right, mass is the most important determining factor. Okay. So when we talked about, when Ray talked about the HR diagram in class, right, we sort of drew this more or less sketch. Why don't we draw it here? It's where we have temperature along the y-axis and luminosity along the, sorry, temperature along the x-axis, luminosity along the y-axis, where this is hot, this is cold, well, cool. And then sort of the sun is roughly in the middle, and then you have some range between, say, 10,000 and 1,000th luminosity along the y-axis. And then you have basically what we call the main sequence, which is a horizontal line. No, I'm sorry. I got my COVID booster on Saturday, and I'm still a little iffy. So, yeah, really tired. So beware, the third one gets you just as bad. This is called the main sequence. This is a diagonal line from the top left to the bottom right of the HR diagram. And this is where stars begin their lives as sort of functional stars that fuse hydrogen into helium, right? They're gonna start their life as a star by landing on the main sequence after they form. We'll talk about how that happens late next week sometime. But first, let's talk about evolution. So the main sequence is sort of the first phase of evolution of the star. So how we defined this when we talked about the HR diagram was this is the period of a star's life when it's fusing hydrogen into helium in the core. And that last part in the core is going to be a sort of a key functional difference in definition between the main sequence and other parts of the star's life. So if we go back and we think about this idea of the equation of state, right? If we write back down pressure is equal to density times a constant times temperature times the mean molecular weight, or divided by the mean molecular weight. As we start out, right, we have some chemical composition, 70% hydrogen, 28% helium. If we take, say, half of that hydrogen have the ability to convert it into helium over the course of the life of the star, what's going to happen to the mean molecular weight? And then based on that, what do you think will happen to the other quantities in this, right? Pressure, density, and temperature. What are they going to have to do to compensate for the changes in the star? So I'd like you to talk about that for a minute. Right? What's going to happen just when we're talking about being on the main sequence, during this period of fusing hydrogen to helium? Not worrying about what happens at the end, but just during that process, what changes are we going to see in the star? So talk about that for a second.
So if the bottom of the fraction is bigger, the top bigger.
What the
shadow is down.
Yeah, that's true.
Which means the star will, like, compress.
I guess this is a key point, because I'm hearing a couple of groups talking about this. Remember that hydrostatic equilibrium has to stay in effect, right? So you always want to be balancing gravity and pressure. So you need to keep pressure constant. What do we think? What has to change in the star? Kevin?
The density or the temperature.
What do they have to do?
They have to increase.
Right. So if we want to keep this number the same, and Sophia brings up a good point, which I'll talk about in a second, but if we want to keep this number the same, as this goes up, we have to make either density or temperature go up to compensate, or both in some amount. Right. As the bottom gets bigger, the top has to get bigger to compensate. So, if we're not moving material down into the core, right, we're just changing hydrogen into helium, probably what's going to happen is the temperature is going to go up. Right? If we're not moving mass around in there, helium, four hydrogens and one helium aren't that much different in mass. Right, there's energy, which is the whole point of this, but the mass difference is not that big. Temperature is going to go up. What happens when temperature goes up inside a star, in the core, where fusion is happening? Garrett? It might happen more often, right? You mean fusion, right?
Yeah.
Right, that's exactly right. So what happens in a star, right, we can talk about something called, what's the right word? Energy generation rate, I guess, is maybe a good way to say it. If we think about, right, as a function of temperature, if we turn temperature up or down in a star, how will that change how often fusion occurs in that star? So for the proton-proton chain, we'll use the letter epsilon to describe this. So EPP. This quantity changes as temperature to the fourth power. So as we start to crank temperature up, right, if we double the temperature, which is not an actual number that we'll do, but if you double the temperature, right, that's 2^4. So it's 16 times more energy than you had before. So now you have increased pressure from all those photons. So the star has to change to compensate on the outside, because you want to keep balancing pressure at every point throughout. And if you made pressure too high in the center, gravity's not going to be able to pull down harder because there's the same amount of mass. So the star has to change to compensate. So on the main sequence, as you're increasing mean molecular weight, you're turning up the temperature, which means you're generating more energy, which means you're increasing the overall pressure inside of the star, which means that the star has to get a little bit bigger to compensate for that change in pressure, so that you keep get gravity balanced at every point throughout the star. So what that means overall, if we think back to what the luminosity of the star is, it's 4 pi r squared sigma t to the fourth. If the star is getting a little bit bigger, that means the luminosity is going to go up. And we can actually sort of run this calculation back in time. And we can find that the luminosity of the sun now is 40% bigger than it was when the sun initially formed. So the sun has gotten 40% brighter over the last 5 billion years or so. Sophia?
Does formed mean when it started making hydrogen to helium?
Yeah, so when we say, when I say when the sun formed, right, there's a whole process by which it forms, but we'll say formed as when that hydrogen fusion process starts in the core. That will be our on switch, basically, for when the things are a star versus when they're not. It's increasing because of the size in this case. So when we talk about luminosity and temperature, the temperature we mean in this equation is the surface temperature, not the core temperature. So that's a good thing to write down there. That's something that's a different, right? Because those are different numbers, right? It's 15 million Kelvin in the core and about 6,000 on the surface. But this number, if you kept luminosity constant, that number might also change. That if the star gets bigger, it would have to get cooler to compensate if you keep the luminosity constant. David, I think you had your hand up first.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, so the temperature in the previous one, that's of the core or the average temperature of the entire star? Or?
Core. Good. This is, yeah, these are good clarifications to make, yeah. Because we're going to talk about lots of different temperatures, so I'll try to make sure to say core or surface temperature, yeah. Joanne?
So if when the pressure goes up and the temperature goes up and that increases the fusion, does that and then increase the other equation too? Because if there's more fusion, then mu goes up, if it's happening faster?
It goes up faster.
So they like both keep making each other go faster and faster?
Yeah. But we're relatively in control here, right? These are not big enough changes to really drive a runaway effect yet.
Does it go like exponentially though?
Very slowly,
okay.
Right? So they made a good point in the book, in the reading, about how if you sort of start at where the sun will end up. We're halfway through now. At the end, if you follow the same rate, it'll be 3 times brighter than when we started. So you have to triple the sun's luminosity over 10 billion years, which seems impressive until you think that's only 0.1% increase per million years. So that's a really slow turning of the knob, right? If you, in a human scale, that's not going to change by any appreciable, measurable amount. So this is just for the main sequence. This change in mu is not that fast. David.
Sorry, can you explain real quick again why the radius increases of the sun in terms of this equation?
Yeah, because the internal pressure has gotten a little bit bigger. So you have to increase, so you have to make the force of gravity change to compensate, the star has to get a little bit bigger. Yeah. Yeah. If that makes sense. If you think of it a slightly different way, right? If the if you stand on the surface, right, the gravity would go down if you got a little bit bigger. That's because the mass inside the sun isn't changing. So if you blew a little bit harder on the balloon, it would get a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe a slightly different way of thinking about it. Does that make sense? Hopefully.
I think so.
Okay. Sophia.
I had another question, but I want to clarify something about what David just said.
Okay.
You said the pressure decreases?
Increases.
Okay. That's what I thought. Just making sure.
Yeah.
When you talked about like mu and T, like the feedback loop, it's not a runaway effect. That just made me wonder, like, is it like a chaotic thing? Is that like studied, like the numericalness of that or something? Just like randomly.
No. It should be relatively, what's the right word? Stochastic. That the opposite of chaotic, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember what that word means exactly, but it's a slow, measurable, predictable increase. It's not going to be bouncing around, if that's what you mean. Okay. So the basic outline here, right, is that we're fusing hydrogen into helium in the core. That's increasing the mean molecular weight, which increases the temperature of the star, which turns up the rate of fusion, which increases the pressure, which makes the star get a little bit bigger, which makes it look a little bit brighter from the outside. So if we go back to our main sequence here, if the sun starts out here on this red dot, what will happen on the HR diagram is that it will slowly start to move up and away from it like that. Garrett?
So that's the surface temperature,
right? That's surface temperature. Joanne?
Wait, why is the temperature going down? I thought it went up.
So, yeah, so it will also get slightly cooler as it gets bigger.
So the temperature goes
on
up.
The surface. In the core, it's getting hotter.
Okay. And it's getting cooler up because it's getting bigger. Because
it's getting a little bit bigger, yeah. There's going to be lots of little things like that where it does this thing and then these two other things happen in response. And it's, yeah, hopefully we can keep it all straight. But it gets a little bit bigger and a tiny bit cooler. Really, this should be more straight vertical, if I'm really being honest, but sort of does that.
Okay, but then why is the luminosity going down?
Luminosity is going up.
Okay.
It should be going up this way.
Oh, that makes sense.
So, but the star is still on the main sequence during this time, right? It's still, because we define main sequence as fusing hydrogen to helium in the core. Sophia?
Why does the surface temperature decrease?
I'm trying to think of a good physical explanation for this. Everything is all linked together, right? So you can say we're going to keep luminosity constant and increase radius, which means the temperature has to go down. But we're not keeping luminosity constant, right? They're sort of all changing a little bit. And so it's just some combination of change gives you a different value for everything. But when you're you're describing this value changes, so this does this, so this does this. Sort of hard to, can't quite say three knobs are changing at the same time. I hope that's a satisfying answer.
Yeah, so for example,
if you think of temperature as its definition, that is the, has to do with the average number of collisions that you're getting.
Mean particle speed.
Yeah. Then, because the star is expanding, it's puffing up, it's getting a little more diffuse at the surface, so there's less particles per square meter hidden, whatever, and so the temperature goes down on the surface.
Okay. But just a little bit.
Yeah. Not a huge amount.
I was just gonna say, to see if I understood, so the effects that mu has on the pore temperature, and then the pressure, the gravity, the radius, the velocity, all that we just talked about, those are more clear and leading order, positive effect, whereas the surface temperature going down is more subtle.
Yes. I think really the way to think about all this is that these are all equilibrium effects. So this is all the sun trying to return to a state where nothing's changing. Right? So you want to keep everything as close to constant as you can. And so it's going to be tiny little turns of knobs to make things a little bit hotter, but then we have to make it a little bit brighter, but then we have to make it a little bit bigger. But the order that it's all, you have to have 10 hands and turn all the knobs at the same time to keep it. This is why I don't run the sun. I don't have that many hands. Okay. What happens when the hydrogen runs out? So we can just sit there and do this until, we're fusing hydrogen to helium. Slowly over the course of 10 billion years. Remember that I think we said this out loud in class, the main sequence lifetime of a star so TMS is approximately equal to 1 over mass to the 2.5. So as you increase the mass of a star, the time it takes to go from birth to end of to run out of hydrogen decreases as you make a star more massive. For the sun, this is equal to 10 billion years. So after 10 billion years, the sun runs out of hydrogen that's hot enough to fuse into helium. And so therefore it no longer has an active source of pressure anymore. What happens? What are we supposed to do to compensate for the loss of fusion mechanism? Let me talk about it for a second. Almost those are questions. Okay. Discuss. What do you think happens? Keep that ideal gas law in mind.
No, you wouldn't change. At that point, you stop changing. There's no energy generation.
Lowercase would be better.
Yes.
You're right.
So I was like, wait, did it?
Time.
Oh,
yeah. We're gonna reuse all sorts of letters. It's hopeless. There's only so many. We're really in trouble when we have to use like emojis instead of clock emoji. I'm not even gonna attempt to try that. Okay, what do we think? What has to happen inside the star once we run out Joanne?
Are we like saying the pressure is staying the same? Or is this like past that when the pressure can change?
Well, we are no longer restricting ourselves, I guess, to saying that the temperature or the pressure stays the same in this particular case. There's still all the photons that were generated by the sun in the fusion process. Those are all still trying to make their way out. So there's still a source of, so it's not going to just immediately collapse type deal, right? That comes much later. And a massive star. We'll talk about supernovas, but so if the pressure, the very central pressure is no longer, there's no longer a source of that, I guess is really what we're saying here. Any ideas? Sophia?
It doesn't relate to ideal gas law.
What?
It doesn't relate to ideal gas law, but it still answers your question.
Okay.
Since you said that, like, the main thing about the main sequence definition is that the hydrogen-helium reaction happens in the core, I guess maybe that moves after the lifetime series.
Thank you for listening. That was nice. Yes. When you run out of hydrogen in the core, you have to start doing hydrogen to helium fusion somewhere else. Where on earth could that be? So remember that we needed certain conditions to get hydrogen to fuse into helium, right? We had to meet some threshold temperature to be hot enough to be able to do it. If you think back to the ideal gas law, what's going to happen if we no longer have an active source of pressure inside the sun in the core part? It's going to start to shrink down, right? So what's going to happen as you shrink down as you increase the density, temperature will start to go up inside the star, right? So eventually you will reach a point where you start to do hydrogen to helium fusion in a shell around the core. I'm going to attempt to draw this, so bear with me. Here we have a circle, that's an oval. Here we have a circle, that's actually a circle. That's going to represent the sun, right? The full whole part, the entire thing. And then here in the middle we have off center, but a core of helium, right? It's just sitting there. So this is the state we are in at the end of the main sequence, right? There's no longer any active fusion. It's just, this is what it looks like, right? You have a core of helium, and then the rest of it is mixed hydrogen and helium and other stuff. As the pressure source turns off, the core will contract down to compensate for the loss of pressure. which means the temperature goes up. Core temperature goes up. As the core temperature goes up, around the core, the temperature will also increase. Right, so you're heating up, you're changing the temperature gradient in the star. If you keep a constant temperature on the outside and a higher temperature in the middle, you have to sort of increase the outer the layers around to compensate for that. You just don't have a wall of changing temperature. At some point in there, fairly close to the core, you'll end up with a shell of hydrogen to helium burning. I just used the phrase burning. I'm not sure I've said that before in this class. But when I say burning, I mean fusion. It's just a technical term that we use. It sounds cooler than fusion sometimes. We're burning through it, right? We're burning hydrogen to helium. So when I say helium burning, I'm burning helium into something else. Hydrogen burning is the main sequence, helium burning, carbon burning, that. Joanne.
So at this point the star is out of the main sequence. So is it really big right now? It's shrinking or what?
So what's gonna happen then? This is the question, right? What's going to happen to the rest of the star as a consequence of this shell burning starting? So we have an entire fresh new source of hydrogen here and a contracting core, which is heating up as we get more dense as it contracts. And on top of that, this shell of hydrogen into helium is adding more helium onto the core, so it's even more, you're getting even more dense because of that. So this is what's going to be called the red giant branch. Just based on the name, what do you imagine is going to happen to the star? David?
It's going to become red and a giant.
Exactly. So if we remember, if we go back to this idea, right, this energy generation rate, where the rate that the proton-proton chain makes energy goes as temperature to the fourth power, we're getting really hot now in the star. And so this combination of core contraction, increasing temperature, and a shell burning, the volume of the shell is actually bigger than the volume of the core that we started with. So you have a big reservoir of material at a much higher temperature, and so this is actually more efficient at helium fusion than the main sequence was. So we're making more energy than we were on the main sequence. So we have more, now we have more pressure from the shell than we did from the core on the main sequence. So the star has to get really big to compensate for that, which means that it gets really cold on the outside, on the surface, and really big. So on the H-R diagram, it will follow a path that looks like this. Very glad I don't have to draw it. So here we see, right, this is where the star starts to turn off of the main sequence, right, where we start to run out of our hydrogen in the core. And then it moves up the red giant branch. And so this turn to the right here, that's where the core is starting to contract. and things are adjusting to the point where you can start to turn on shell burning, which is when it starts to turn up on the Red Giant branch. Joanne.
Do all the stars along the main sequence all end up going to the far right?
Yes.
It's just a different path for all of them then?
All stars will never evolve off the main sequence to the left. They will always evolve off to the right. Exactly how they evolve off to the right depends on the mass of the star. So like things, really massive, hot stuff will basically just go straight over and then shoot back and forth a lot and then explode. We'll talk about that on Wednesday, hopefully. But everything will always go to the right. Everything will always end up in the upper right corner. Except maybe something down here.
What are those ones? Just
and those
go
will
up?
Like go up and then like do that, and then they might make it like up to here ish, but not any further. Sophia.
So you said that because of the large volume of the shell compared to the core and the large temperature of the shell compared to the core, the pressure increases a lot, so the star has to
Yes.
size a lot.
Yes.
And you said then it also gets a lot cooler. So does that come from assuming the luminosity to be like constant, but like it doesn't look constant on there?
This is again that changing.
Relatively constant?
Yeah, changing up. It's not relatively constant. It increases by a factor of a million.
But like, is it like, maybe if you took like the differential, you said like DL.
Yeah, slowly over bits of time.
So the reason that the temperature decreases is because, like, in a short amount of time, the luminosity is constant and the radius increases, so to keep the luminosity constant.
Well, on the Red Giant branch, right, if you look at the vertical part, now we're keeping temperature constant on the surface here. So then luminosity is a straight radius increase.
Oh, so the
change.
Part where you're, when you said that temperature decreases, that's like the little horizontal part before the vertical part.
Yep.
Nice.
Close enough for, yeah. I would say that's a good 200 level understanding of the situation, yeah. Stellar physics gets a lot more complicated if you take the 300 level or the graduate level. But we don't have to do that here. So things get cooler after you, as you're adjusting to prepare the interior of the star for shell burning, and then as shell burning turns on, the star shoots up vertically and you turn back. Joanne?
So the pressure at this point is still making it get bigger?
The core pressure, yes.
Okay.
Still getting bigger.
So when you said the pressure, there's no more pressure, that was...
Think of that, so there's no more fusion, you're not adding more photons in, but you're compressing down the gas you still have in the core.
And then the shell...
And that's following the ideal gas law.
Okay. And the shell around it's what's making it get bigger?
And yeah, the shell around it
okay.
is what's driving the star to increase in size. So that's the Red Giant branch. So after stars run out of hydrogen, they start to go up the Red Giant branch once the shell burning turns on. So the temperature in the core is also really increasing at this point. It's getting hotter and hotter. We're getting up into the hundreds of millions of Kelvin range here. What's at this point keeping the core from completely collapsing in on itself? As we're adding more mass to it, right? There's nothing keeping it. There's no active pressure. It's just ideal gas pressure. But as you start to push things down together, gravity is going to get stronger as you get closer in. So what's keeping things from truly collapsing is what we call degeneracy pressure. Have people heard that term before? Sophia's nodding. Some people are nodding. What is degeneracy pressure, Sophia, since you've heard the term before?
Well, I hope I'm right. So it comes from quantum mechanics, right?
Yeah.
So the type of particles that we know as like all massive particles, they can't be in the exact same quantum state as each other,
right?
Which amounts to them, basically, you can't have, say, like two electrons in the exact same, like, position and all the same properties.
Right.
Therefore, they need to be like spread out. So when you're throwing up, say you put up a bunch of electrons into like a finite volume,
yeah,
that volume can't get, like, there's a minimum, a lower bound on that volume,
right,
which, like, and then they're hitting into each other, which creates pressure.
That's a great explanation.
So imagine you have a tiny little box and you want to stuff it full of electrons. That's basically what's happening in the core of the sun here. But a unique property of electrons, all particles, protons, electrons, right, they repel each other from the electromagnetic force. But also, if you shove a bunch of them into a tiny space, they can't have the same quantum state as each other. They can't have the same spin, all the other different quantum mechanical quantities that you want to think about. They can't have exactly the same address, basically. You have to separate them out. And so if you try to shove a bunch of them into a small box, there's only so many different addresses you can have, and you have to keep things separated out, which means the volume can only get so small. And that's what we call electron degeneracy pressure. That idea of quantum indeterminacy providing a way of keeping things from getting too close together. And so that provides a pressure that keeps the core completely collapsing down. Sophia.
Can I just add something?
Yes.
Basically, like, the degeneracy pressure slash the, like, exclusion principle, that's basically just, like, the very intuitive fact that, like, say you have a box that's, like, 1 square meter or 1 meter cubed, and then you have, like, 1 meter cubed of, like, jelly beans or something, like, you can't put 2 cubic meters of jelly beans because only one can fit. So it's kind of just like a quantum mechanical, like, statement of that, like, intuitively.
Yeah. I think that's a good analogy. Like, you can't have 2 red jelly beans in the same spot is a sort of another way of thinking about it too, right? So all the red ones have to stay apart from each other, and so that provides the red, blue, green, yellow, they all have to stay separate. So electrons are keeping the core supported instead of what we call thermal pressure, which is what we've been thinking of so far. So this electron degeneracy pressure, we'll call it PE, all this does, the only quantity that this is dependent on is the density of the material, not the temperature. So it doesn't matter how hot the core is. It stays at a constant pressure as long as the density is the same. And that goes as density rho to the 5/3 for electrons. So that's not a good 5. That's even worse 5. Five thirds, that's better. So the density will increase as the core continues to contract down, but that just means that there's more pressure pushing back from the electrons. But the temperature can do whatever the hell it wants. So it just shoots up. So it gets really, really hot in the core. Hundreds of millions of Kelvin. And then what happens? all of a sudden you get hot enough, 100 million Kelvin. I said hundreds, but you know, 100 million Kelvin. It's hot enough to start fusing helium into carbon throughout the core. And it happens at the same time for all of it. It goes really fast. And this is called a helium flash. Because you're doing it all at the same time in a flash. Anyway. So this follows what we call the triple alpha process. Remember that an alpha particle is a helium 4 nucleus, something we mentioned a couple classes ago, just the historical name for that particular particle. So the way the triple alpha process works is you take two heliums and that makes a beryllium 8, which is one of the proton-proton chain 3 steps in reverse. Basically, you split a beryllium 8 into two heliums. Then you take one of those berylliums and tack on another helium. So that's the triple alpha part there. 1, 2, 3. That makes a carbon plus some energy. The carbon can also, the carbon also can capture a helium once it's there, and that makes oxygen plus some energy. And then once you've got oxygen, you can capture a helium, and that will make neon plus some energy. So now we're starting to make some heavy elements here, which is fun. Now we can breathe. That's pretty great. Pretty excited about that one.
And exists because we're carbon.
That's true. There you go. This is the step you want to get to. We talked about the energy generation rate of the proton-proton chain being temperature to the fourth power is the dependence. The energy generation rate of the triple alpha process goes as temperature to the 41st power. So you're really pumping out some photons here. It's going to be fun. It's going to get real bright real quick. And this is happening, remember, at 100 million Kelvin in the core. So the consequence of this, this high energy generation rate, and the fact that you have just a ball of helium sitting there waiting to be fused into something, this means that you release, all at the same time, 10 to the 11 times the luminosity of the sun, all at once.
Except for the sun.
This is in the sun, yeah.
When the sun does this, it's going to be very bright.
Well, no, because none of that light makes it out of the star.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty crazy in itself, right?
So all this happens like in an instant?
All this happens in an instant.
Okay.
Well, you know, the space of a few minutes probably, which is instant scale on the sun's time scale. None of this, I have written down here a few seconds. So that's pretty good. I'll write that here too. None of that makes it out of the star. Instead, what it does is it breaks that electron degeneracy pressure. It provides enough force from all those photons to turn the core back into an ideal gas. Sophia?
I'm just confused what you said. It breaks the electron degeneracy pressure. What does that mean? Like, what happens? And why does it?
All those electrons are cramming down together in the core and keeping it supported, but all these photons push them back out, and so they're no longer providing a source of electron degeneracy pressure.
Okay, so it breaks the reliance on degeneracy pressure,
right?
Back to
and now it's hot enough to keep it supported by thermal pressure instead. So all those photons get spent up, they get absorbed in electrons, combining with things, pushing out, being absorbed by electrons, so none of those photons actually end up traveling out of the star. They're just used to do the...
Yeah, I meant radially outward, like within the star, I guess. Or like within
where the electrons end up? I'm not sure.
Oh, I meant that. But I think you explained it.
But, yeah. Something happens to them that they're not all just... Some combination of processes.
How long is it like a red giant before that happens?
A few million years, handful million years. Depends on the mass of the star, how long it takes, right? Because same way that we have a main sequence lifetime, there's going to be a red giant branch lifetime. The more massive the star, the shorter it will be. Where was I? Yes, okay. Return star to ideal gas. So this is what happens up here at the very tip of the red giant branch. Right, so you reach the end of the red giant branch and you flash in the core. And then something else has to happen to you, which we'll get to on Wednesday. But first, let's just make sure we're all clear on the properties of red giants, because this is sort of a major phase of evolution of a star. And I skipped over it before. Red giants. They have luminosity greater than 100 times that of the sun. Temperatures about 4,000 Kelvin. And their radius is somewhere between 30 and 300 times that of the sun, which is pretty big. Basically, when the sun turns into a red giant, it will basically come out to just inside of Earth's orbit in terms of its size. So you will not want to be here in 5 billion years. It's going to get toasty. It's hot in here today. It's going to be really hot. Okay. Unless there are any questions, we'll come back to evolution on Wednesday. Cool. Yes. That part? Yeah, Joanne.
Could we like watch this happen on any stars around us?
No. Not directly. But we can see, there's trillions of stars that we can see. Well, high billions. And so we can see stars at every point throughout their evolution. Basically, if you plot an HR diagram with real data that fills in all these tracks, basically. Depending, except for the ones that take really short amount of time.
So we haven't seen like the actual. Never mind.
So when we talk about clusters next week, that's a great way of testing this because those stars are all the same age, and then so it's just dependent on the mass of the star where it is on the HR diagram.
Like we couldn't observe the whole process for one star because it takes.
Well, yeah, I know. Oh, sorry, multiple.